Hello, my name is Michelle O'Brien, and I will be having a conversation with Biani Garcia for the New York City Trans Oral History Project in collaboration with the New York Public Library's Community Oral History Project. This is an oral history project centered on the experiences of trans-identifying people. It is July 13th, 2017, and this is being recorded at the Make the Road New York office in Queens. Hello. Tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
Well, I'm Biani Garcia. I'm a transgender from Mexico. And the most I know from my childhood is being happy, being just a child.
Yeah. Where in Mexico are you from?
Veracruz, Mexico. I born in Veracruz, Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And what was your family like?
My mom is very religious. She used to go to church and, you know, put some flowers and, you know, the Mexican culture. But my father is a little bit machista. But I feel comfortable with that. I've been dealing with that for a long time, and they changed it.
What kind of work did they do when you were growing up?
They are teachers. Mm-hmm. My father is a math teacher, and my mom is social justice or social teacher.
Of like high school or children?
High school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how long did you live in Veracruz?
I live in Veracruz. Well, I born in Veracruz, and after I moved to Chiapas when I was 7 or 8 years. I moved to Chiapas. No, it's Chiapas have you know, different places to live, and we moved to Comitán de Domínguez. That is a beautiful place to live.
Why did your family move?
Because work. Yeah. You know, they are teachers, and they decide to go to Chiapas to work, and, you know, a new life, to start a new life.
Yeah. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister that is older than me. I have a brother than me, and then my other brother that is here in New York, and my little brother that is called Daniel.
What were you like as a teenager?
Oh, well, actually I was so shy person. I was a person that doesn't like to go out. I was a person that I don't like to talk to no one or play soccer games or play with other kids. I was so shy.
So what would you do?
I stay in my room. Like drawing, mm-hmm. Sometimes riding or reading my bicycle.
What did you like to read?
Some books, you know, cuentos, Mexican cuentos, and I love that.
Yeah. Do you remember any of your favorite books?
I really don't.
Yeah. So how long were you in Chiapas?
Oh my God, I went there for when I was 8, so I moved to Tijuana when I was 14, so that's been like 5 years.
Did your family move, or did you move alone?
I moved alone.
Yeah, what led you to move to Tijuana?
That is where my life started.
Yeah.
It was a day when my transgender friend and my two other friends, that they was gays, and we were outside of my house, and
this was in Chiapas?
Yes.
Yeah.
So two men came out from a car, and then they started beating my friend, my trans friend, and they killed her. Yes, simple reason, because she was a trans.
This was when you were 14?
Mm-hmm. I was 14. After that, I was so scared, I cried a lot, but they tell us if you go to the police or do a report or testify, you're gonna be killed. So we run, and after 2 days, I found out that my 2 other friends were killed. So they was looking for me. But they didn't know that incident was in front of my house. So after that, they found out that I live in front of where the incident happened. And they went to my house and they was looking for me. And after that, it was like 4 p.m. My mom told me, you have to go, you have to do well. Because if you stay, they're gonna kill you. I cry. I give a big hug to my mom. She gave me my documents and gave me some money. And I tell her that I was gay at that time. And she told me, it's fine. I know that already. But my father was like, you know, he has a different perspective of being a gay boy. I moved to Tijuana. It was hard because I didn't know anyone.
Can I ask a little bit more about Chiapas? So you had a trans friend, and you said to your mom that you were gay. Were you in a community of other, did you know other gay and trans people?
No, Chiapas? As I told you the first time, I was so shy. So my only 2 or 3 friends, they was...
Yeah, was so there. You just had a small number of friends. Yeah.
So I went to school and I don't like to talk to anyone or some of them that identify as a gay, and sometimes I talk to them, but not like many friends.
So you made a very small circle of other gay and trans friends. And the men who killed your friends, were they, do you know anything about what their scene was? Were they the kind of people you'd see around, or were they from your area? Or?
I think they met my friend, my trans friend, in a party, and then one of them, she was dancing, and one of them came and, you know, took her out to dance and everything. And after, like, when she was dancing, she told him that she was in trans.
Yeah.
And then he gets so angry with that because all their friends was laughing.
Yeah.
And they tell her that I'm going to kill you. That is the only thing that she remembers.
Yeah.
And after 2 days or 3 days, she would kill her.
Yeah. So your mom was supportive and concerned about you?
Yeah, all the time.
Every
single mom, I think, they are super supportive. They love their sons and daughters, and they are supporters.
Yeah. So you moved to Tijuana?
Yep, I moved to Tijuana when I was 14. So I don't know anyone. I just decided to go and not tell my mom where I was. It was difficult the first days because I had to sleep on the streets, in church. But there's no other place to go. And then I found out a gay boy again, and he was super gay. He was super nice and everything.
Wait, he was what?
He was gay.
Yeah.
I found him, and he told me, what are you doing here? Why you don't have family? I explained him what happened. And he told me, okay, so go to my apartment. He took me to his apartment, And I start a new life, not as a partner, but as a friend with him. And he told me, you want to work? What do you want to do? You know, school? And I was like, I want to work. But at that time, at age of 14, it was difficult to get a job. So he was 18, 19, I think. And he gave me his documents, a copy of his documents, and I don't know what he did on his documents. And I started working with his documents. For about 8 months, I started working, paying the rent, you know, hanging out with him.
What kind of work were you doing?
In a factory. It was a factory. It was JBC, JBC factory, and it was good. I mean,
what were you doing in the factory?
There's TV. And I was, you know, doing some work with cakes and all kind.
So electronics assembly.
Electronic systems.
Yeah. Why do you think your friend helped you?
Because I share my history or my testimony or my story with him, and he decided to help me. But his dream is to come to New York.
Yeah.
I was talking to him one day, and he said, my dream is to go to New York. I have a sister there, and I want to go. And I'm working so hard to get money and, you know, cross the border, open a coyote and go there. I was like, New York sounds good.
What was New York to you at that time? What did you imagine New York was like?
What I'm seeing on TV shows, Spider-Man, I think that New York was a great city, a great opportunity to start a new life. Because I know from that time that I want to become a trans woman, but I wasn't available to do it in Mexico because it's machismo, and I was scared. I was a kid.
Yeah.
So, after working so hard, 8 months, nine months, I don't remember, I decided to cross the border with him. We paid a fair day. We was on a night, like 6 nights on the desert. It was a difficult experience. I feel that no one deserves what it has, because it is so difficult.
How much did the coyote cost?
I don't remember. It was like $4,000.
And how much were you making at the factory?
They pay me like $1,000, like mil pesos, it's like $100 now.
Okay. Per month?
Week.
Per week, okay. So that's what, how long would you have to work to?
Oh, yeah. A lot.
Yeah, so that's like almost a year's pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I have like to work extra an hour and then another job.
Yeah.
It was difficult.
Yeah. And the 6 days in the desert, so many people die in the desert.
Yeah.
It's very dangerous.
It is dangerous. I was 14. I was so scared.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had my friend there, and he was older than me, and he always, like, he got my back and everything. And
were you with a group?
Yeah.
A large group?
It was, like, 20 people that was trying to cross the border, and that I remember when the person that was leading us told us we're almost there, in like 2 hours we're there, where the place where someone is going to pick us up. So After 2 hours, we arrived to the place, and then two vans came to the place and pick us up. And we was lucky because the other van that came first was stopped by the migra, so and then we just passed.
So another van was stopped of the people that you had gone with, and they were. Do you know? You heard that they had been stopped by.
Yeah, they were stopped, and we don't.
Yeah.
And they get deported.
Yeah.
It was difficult, but we, but sorry, I didn't share. When we was in the desert, there was people that. Robbers. There was like ladrones. I don't know how to say ladrones in English. But they stole our water, our clothes, money, everything.
So thieves or bandits.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we lost everything.
Yeah.
We just have like 2 bottles of water for 20 people. And we have to, one night when the water is gone, we have to drink water from a place where cows and horses drink water. And it was so difficult. Like, I was like, how people do this? But it was a hard decision to make. But now I'm here. After we arrived to New York.
But where did the vans take you first?
I don't remember. It was in a hotel where we was for a day, and then they split us to every single person.
Yeah.
Where we want to go.
And did you go directly to New York?
Yeah, they take us to New York.
Yeah.
My friend and I would take us. They take us to New York. And they leave us at Times Square. Because we have nowhere to go. Because we lost everything. We lost my friend contact information. So he said, we don't know how to, you know, get in touch with her sister.
Wow.
Because we lost everything. So it was on January. It was so cold that we didn't have like any jacket and everything.
This is like 2004, 2005?
2005.
Yeah. I moved to New York
so
that year too.
Cold.
Yeah.
So we started like, you know, sleeping or on the train station, like homeless. For about 3 days, and then we found a lady that take us to a church that was on 14th Street, I think. And we was there for 2 days. And after that, my friend remembered his sister phone number. He called her, and her sister went to pick us up.
Yeah.
We just wait like for 2 hours, 1 hour, I don't remember. And she bring us to Queens. I think that it was a good experience of being undocumented, of, you know, crossing the border and experience every bad things that happens to us. And we start a new life. I started working in a restaurant that it's called HK. It's on 39 and 9th Avenue as a dishwasher.
As a what?
As a dishwasher.
Okay, yeah. Where was, did you live with his sister?
Mm-hmm.
Where
I lived with her.
Where did she live?
She lived on 103rd Street.
Is that Jackson Heights?
Corona.
Okay, Corona, yes.
Yeah. But after 1 month, or at least less than 1 month, she was super homophobic.
Oh, wow.
And she told me that I was trying to I don't know how I say it, convertir a su primo in gay. Even he was gay, but she didn't know that he was gay. She was saying that I was her his boyfriend, and I was like, no, we are friends. And then she told me, you have to go. And I was like,
it was easier to throw you out than admit her brother was gay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to talk to Eduardo, and she was like, no, you should go now. You have to go now. I packed my stuff and I went out.
Yeah.
I started living outside again. That's as homeless, but I was working.
Sure, so, dishwasher, okay.
So I decided to do, you know, double turn of work from morning to night, because they close like around 4 a.m. So from 9 to 8, so I have like, you know, time to be inside places, because it was so cold. After that, because my English is like not too well, but at that time it was like a little bit less than now. And the manager of the restaurant told me, you want to do like a basketball work on the floor? I was like, yeah, I want to do that. And I started doing different work as a busboy. I started to do that. I met a man, a Colombian man. He was like 40 years old. I was almost 16. He got in love with me. He helped me bring me flowers, chocolates, and I told him that I was homeless, and he told me, you wanna go to my apartment? I live alone. I was like, no, I'm okay. I'm gonna try to find some other place. But after being outside in the cold weather, I decided to move to there, because I didn't want to live outside.
Where were you sleeping when you were?
On the trains.
On the trains, yeah.
Yeah.
And then did you know anyone else in New York at this point? You had been around for a month or so.
Yeah, almost a month.
Yeah. So you were very isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was by myself. I don't know anyone. And I think the decision that I made, it was my bad decision.
Yeah.
Because I went to live with him. From now to 1 month, he was super nice, he was super sweet. But after that, he changed a lot.
Yeah.
He started calling me Daniel. He started saying me or taking me pictures and putting them on media, social media, or, you know, pages where people are looking for sex, other forums, stuff like that. And I was like, I don't want pictures like that. I don't feel comfortable. And he take me to his home. And when I put my feet inside there, I never come out after 7 months. I was there all the time. For about 7 months, I was in that house. Never, never went out.
You were not able to leave?
No.
Yeah.
Because he always was telling me, if you go out, the police is gonna take you because you are undocumented.
So he would frighten you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, but that is not New York. New York is different. And me dijo, yeah, New York is different. This is New Jersey. I was like, okay. So I explained to him that I want to work. And he told me, no, you're not going to work. After like 1 more month, he told me that something happened in Colombia and he needs a lot of money. And I was like, okay, let me work. And he was like, no, you're undocumented, you don't have documents. And if you go out, the police or ICE is gonna take you. I was like, okay, so what can I do? And then he starts telling me that I need to do sex work. I was like, I don't wanna do that. And he told me, I need a lot of money. And he told me, do you love me? I was like, yeah, I love you, but I'm not gonna do that. And he told me, okay, if you love me, you have to do it. I was like, no. He beat me many times. He pushed my face on the mirror. And he treated me super bad. He always told me, you are nothing, you are undocumented. You are an illegal person. And he told me, if you don't do sex work, I'm gonna call the police and ICE is gonna take you back to your country because you are a fucking illegal person. I was scared of going back to Mexico, and I shared my whole life with him, what happened in Mexico. And I am doing sex work for him. He doesn't give me anything, no money. Even he gave me like 3 condoms a day. And I have to do or work with different men, like 10 men every day. So I have to decide where I'm gonna use the condom.
Would he set up the clients?
That was what he was doing.
Yeah.
And then I found many pictures of others, other guys, or same like me, like with my body, and I don't know what happened to them. I don't know if they escape. I don't know if they... something else. I do sex work for about 7 months. But after 7 months, I get so tired of doing that. Some of the clients told me, I want to do sex with you without condoms. So I tell them, if you want to do that, you have to give me money. You have to give me a little bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't give it to him, you don't give it to me. So they give me some extra money. I work for like 2 months doing without condoms. I don't care about AIDS or HIV. I don't care about that. I just want to go out.
Yeah.
It was one night when he was drunk. He gets so drunk, and I was like kicking him or trying if he was awake, and he doesn't wake up. So I decided to take my documents, to take the key and pack some clothes that I have, and I took a cab and I went back to Queens.
Where was he living?
I don't know. Because that's why I'm telling you that the first day when I put my feet inside of his house, I never...
Yeah. So you didn't... But you managed to make it back to Queens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell the driver, take me back to Queens, New York. And he told me, it's like 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
And he told me, you have money to pay that? And I was like, ¿cuánto me vas a cobrar? How much are you going to charge me for that? And he told me $300. Here. Okay. Take me. I was so tired. I was scared. I get sleep in the car. So he wake me up when he was on Junction Boulevard and Roosevelt Avenue. And he told me, levántate, wake up, we're here. And it was 2 hours of driving.
Yeah.
And now you start a new life being here in New York again. But I have some money, so I can do, I will rent an apartment or rent a room or whatever. I was walking on Roosevelt Avenue, and then I found a little document that you can find there saying, Serrano Cuarto, we rent a room. So I called the number and a lady told me, how much is, means you have to come and see the room. I was like, okay, where is the room? So I went to the room. It was like this little. And she was like, $400. I was like, here. I give the money to her. And I started my new life.
Yeah.
I don't want to go out. I was so scared. Because I was like, I was so panicked that he was outside or... You know, and
the fear and
yeah,
pain was in you.
Yeah, but after paying my rent 2 months, 3 months, harmonious or bad.
Yeah,
so I decided to work again in a restaurant. My house. I was there. It was good. I was like that kind of person that goes to work, go home, come to work, and no talk to no one. It was one day when I was I was buying some stuff for my hair, because I always love my hair to be like, you know, beautiful. And I found a trans person there, that she was my friend, and she told me, how are you? ¿Cómo estás? I was like, bien, gracias. Fine, thank you. And she was like, oh, you are so cute. You are so, you have a beautiful body, blah, blah. I was like, thank you. And here's my number. You can call me or whatever you want. I was like, okay, thank you. But she knows that I was gay. But I called her because I was, you know, boring in my room. And she told me, I'm going out to a party, you wanna go? I was like, no, I'm scared. And she told me, no, let's go, vamos. I decided to go. She took me to Atlantis. It was Atlantis at that time. Now it's called Revolution. I went there for the first time, for a gay bar. And I was like, what is this place? But I start a new life, meeting a new people, and talking to new people, and I got in love with someone else, but he didn't know that I was, that everything that happened to me. I decided to do my transition because my friend was super beautiful, and I do my transition. She told me, you are so beautiful, you want to become a woman, right? I was like, yeah, I want to do that, but I'm scared. And she told me, no, don't be scared. And she bought me the first hormones, but not from the doctor, from the street.
You were like 17?
17. No, it was more than that. It was like almost 18 to 19.
Mm-hmm.
I bought my hormone. I put my hormone. And after I buy them, every single week I buy one. I was working in a restaurant one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then after like 1 month and a half, they tell me there is no work for you here anymore.
You were?
I was like, why? Because the place is too slow. Yeah, but I was like, yeah, but I have almost 2 years working here. And they told me, yeah, but there is nothing else to do. But the main reason why they throw me out is because I was talking about this.
Yeah.
And I was trying to do my transition. So I live, and after 1 month, 2 months, I was looking for a job and no job for me. I didn't find a job for me. It was so difficult to get a job. But at that time, my brother came from Mexico to here. He was here already. And oh my god, yeah, I do my transition. And there wasn't no work for me, and I decided to do sex work again here in Roswell Avenue, because that was my friend was doing. I didn't want to like do it, but there is no other way to, you know, raise some money to pay rent, pay food, pay bills. And I do it for at least a month, I mean a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was arrested for doing that, supposedly. Oh, for carrying condoms. It was a night when I was walking with my boyfriend through my house and police arrested me because they think that I was doing sex work. And it was a bad experience. Yeah. When I was 19, it was on October 9th. No, October 21, I think. 2009. It was my friend, me, we was on the corner of 94th Street. It was like 2 p.m. I mean 2 a.m. in the morning. And a homophobic man came, he was walking by. And he started like, yelling, fog slurs, and you know, start beating my friend again. And she defends herself, and I decide to help her. I push him, he went to the floor, and he was like stuck, and parándose, standing up. And my friend,
he was what?
Parándose, I don't know how to, when you fall,
mm-hmm.
you know. I stand up again.
Yeah. He got back up.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear when my friend was, fighting with her, and my friend took her high heel and broke his head.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see that happened. I just told my friend, let's go, let's stop a cab, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So we take a cab and he stopped the cab. The taxi driver. And he tells us, you're not going anywhere. So we get out of the car and we walk through 94th, 95th and 37th Avenue. We was walking. He was following us. But he found a broomstick. You know, if you do this to a broomstick, it's gonna, like, you can use that as a weapon. So we stop a cab, a van from one 115 police department. And we were trying to explain them that, you know, we was a survivor of hate crime. But after the letters, he saw that we stopped police, throw out the broomstick, and he walked through us. But English was better than math. And the police started talking to him. And I saw him like he was bleeding. And I was like, what are you doing? And the only thing that I said to the police officer that his name was Rivera. I was like, we was defending ourselves. And he was like, we was speaking in English and not Spanish. And he told us, I don't speak your Spanish. I speak English. So he arrests us. And for that reason, for defending ourselves, we went to Rikers for 19 months. I was in Rikers for 19 months. It was the most bad experience in my life too. It was super difficult. But after 19 months of that and being like almost being deported, I found an immigration lawyer that took my case. And she ran me a T visa for me.
What? She what?
She got me a T visa for me. T visa is for trafficking survivors.
Yeah.
I talked to her and I told her my whole, you know, that happened to me when I was 16. And she read me that and she told me, you're going out after this, you're going out, you're going to start a new life here.
How did you get in touch with her?
There is a person that it's also, she does a lot of work for the trans community. Her name is Lorena Borjas, and she got in touch with her.
We have Lorena Borjas. We have an interview with her.
Okay. She helped me a lot.
And where did you meet Lorena?
Actually, I didn't have the opportunity to talk to Lorena, but my other friends. She went to her groups.
Yeah. So were you at Rikers when you first were in touch with the lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was at Rikers. And I went out. I was so happy of being in here again. And this time with documents. I went to court, everything. I went to the interview with the police of TV's a police, I think. I don't know how they call them. And he approved it. He approved the visa. I just get my green card 3 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I feel so happy.
How long was it ago that you got out of Rikers?
You were 17, 18 months. But after we went to board, my birthday is on March 5th. Mm-hmm. We went to court on March 7th. And then the lawyer, the judge said, your time is over. Mm-hmm. So that means we're done.
So you were 20, 21?
Yeah, I was 20, 21.
So like
almost 22.
Three years ago?
No, it was more than I'm 27.
27, okay, yeah.
So it was like five years ago.
Yeah.
And it was Maggie.
Yeah.
And after 2 days, I went to pick us up. He bring us to Baddick Street. He take us fingerprints. And he tell us, the officer tell us, you live in like, 15 minutes. You're going out. I feel so happy.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when my lawyer told me, your green card was approved, I was crying. But after everything that happened to me, I just feel like I want to do something new in my life. I want to fight against this, against that. That is the main reason why I'm doing my work. I'm trying to do my best.
Yeah.
To help others.
Mm-hmm.
To help the future generations of trans women, of colors. Because we live in a world that if you are a trans woman of color, you can be killed.
Yeah.
And that's too bad.
Yeah.
And I think I do a lot of work. I'm here in Middleborough, New York. I've been working here since I came out from jail.
Tell me about how you first got involved with Middleborough.
Oh, well, they helped me a lot.
Yeah.
They always went to my court days, and the organizer, that is Daniel Puerto, always was there. And when I was, when the first time they, when we was at Baddick Street and then take the train, the first stop, he was here. I was like, thank you so much for all your help and support. He was like, yeah, of course.
So you're working with Daniel Puerto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was on, I don't remember the date, it was on Friday, and then Daniel Puerto told me, you have to come next week, we're having a weekly meeting here, the big room. I was like, okay, my lawyer came also, she was here.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me a little cake, and then she celebrated my birthday with me, and I was so happy.
That was at the Queen's office here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here. And I started as a member here at Make the Road, and then as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have the opportunity to have an internship. That's, it wasn't like 15 hours that I have to work. It was like 300. It wasn't a lot of money, but you know, I want to do something. And after that, I became an organizer for this community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so happy, I'm so proud of that.
What's your job title now?
LGBT organizer.
Mm-hmm. How long have you had this job?
5 years.
5 years, yeah.
Yeah.
And for people who might never have heard of Make the Road, could you describe it overall as an organization?
Make the Road New York, it's a non-profit organization. It's filled with my house. Because we always have coffee, we always have people cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And we receive you as a person.
Yeah.
We'll give you a hug every single day you need. You're not alone.
And what's the range of the general type of work and community that Make the Road is?
Well, actually, we have different kinds of community meetings. We have the LGBT community meetings on Mondays. Also, we have housing committee. We have workers committee, we have immigration committee, and also we have a youth community for homes for youth, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's why I love Metro New York, and also because I love Scream, and they have a lot of protests, marches.
Yeah.
I love Scream. I just love
Scream. You love to scream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And since 2012, when I came out from Rikers, we decided to do the first Trans Latina March.
Oh, wow.
That was an idea that came from Karina Claudio, that was my supervisor at that time.
Oh.
And we decided to, you know, do something new, something that we can show up for our community, where we can create community, we can create visibility and resilience. So we came out from the first Trans Latina March in 2012. It was like 50 people walking by Roosevelt Avenue, and then you know that the second year, and there was a little bit more people turned. Here was a little bit more people, and this year we have 500 people marching with us.
That was this week.
I was
on Monday. Yeah.
It was amazing. I was crying when the march ended.
Yeah.
I came to my office and my supervisor was like, "Come, let's give me a hug."
Yeah.
Because it was a hard work.
Yeah.
To mobilize a lot of people. Last year we have 300 people, and now I was spending like 350, but 500, yes, amazing turnout.
What are the politics or political goals of the Trans Latina March?
Demand equality, justice. This year we was focused on hate crimes, because last year and this year we're saying 20 attacks on trans women or against trans women. You know, this year we have been losing 15 lives of trans women of color across the country, and that's too bad. And also we have a president that's saying that we are nothing for him.
Yeah.
That's why we want to, you know, be free, be who we are. We want to create visibility, not for the president, but also because we want to, that community that we live here, respect us.
Yeah.
And also I'm so happy because in 1 month, I'm going back to Mexico. After 12 years,
I'm
not seeing my family.
Now that you have your green card, you can travel.
I feel so happy. I feel so excited. I'm always like nervous. I'm always like, oh my God, I can't.
How long did you get in touch with them when you got out of Rikers, or how long have you been in touch with your family?
After I did my transition, it was difficult to tell my mom or my father that I was home. So I just contact with them for about 7 years.
Yeah.
But now I called them like 3 months ago, and the first thing that I told my mom was, "Mami, voy para Mexico." I was like, "Mom, I'm going back to Mexico."
Yeah.
And she was like, "No, you're kidding me." I was like, "No." And she's so happy. She's
wonderful.
Happy. I'm happy too.
Are they in Chiapas?
Yeah. They still live there.
And tell me about, besides the Trans Latino March, the other organizing that you're involved with here at Make the Road.
We have our weekly meetings every Monday, where we can discuss topics on, you know, the Trans Latino issues.
Is that TRIP or is
trip.
That a...
TRIP.
Yeah. So what does TRIP stand for?
TRIP is the Trans Immigrant Project,
mm-hmm.
and it's a place where if you are an LGBTQ ally person, you can join us to our weekly meetings. We talk about housing issues, employment discrimination, hate crimes, etc., etc., etc.
How many people go to the meetings?
Sometimes 20, sometimes 15, sometimes 30.
And are they outside of the meetings? Do they all know each other in a community,
yeah,
or for, are they from different
actually,
communities or what?
Yeah, actually, Jackson Heights has the most big population of trans women, especially I think some of them are from Mexico. The majority is from Mexico, so. We're doing a lot of work here.
Yeah. And you talked about being a dishwasher and then getting fired because of your transition and then doing sex work. How do women in TRIP survive? How do people manage to have a home and pay rent?
Actually, that is a big issue for my trans community.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a place to work. Some of them have to do sex work to survive.
Yeah.
And also, there is a lot of housing discrimination against us. Because if you are renting an apartment, they think that you are going to do sex work inside them. So, you have to change their minds.
Yeah.
You have to be more humane. Because we are people.
Yeah.
Because many people think that if you are a trans woman, you are a sex worker.
Yeah.
But we can do something else.
Are there other kinds of jobs that people do besides sex work?
Some of them.
Yeah.
But like, they're like 70% do sex work,
yeah,
and the other percent do something else.
What sorts of things?
Sometimes restaurants,
mm-hmm,
hair salon,
mm-hmm,
nails.
Now there was a Make the Road project around a cooperative hair salon.
Mm-hmm.
Is this? Do you? What is it?
Yeah, we start seeing a lot of discrimination on the job place. So as Make the Road New York, we decided to do the first cooperativa for the trans community. But we're still working on it.
Yeah.
We want to, you know, create ways to prevent discrimination, to have tools to combat discrimination.
Has it opened or is it a plan?
To what?
The cooperative, the trans cooperative.
It was the first trans cooperative.
It opened, yeah.
But after we've seen a lot of problems, you know, trans women, sometimes they get so angry with, because, you know, I don't know, we always like that. And as Make the Road New York, we decided to not continue with the cooperative.
So it was, there was interpersonal
conflict.
Yeah, we
have another org that is working with a cooperative.
What's the other organization?
I don't remember the name. But they are working with a cooperative.
Yeah. And are there, what other trans organizations in the city do you work with most, or LGBT organizations?
I work with ABP.
Mm-hmm.
The Anti-Violence Project. I work with the center, the LGBT Center,
mm-hmm,
the Trans Latina Network, ACQC, Community Healthcare Network, and some others orgs that, you know, we are close to them.
Yeah.
It's a very, very long project too.
Yeah. Where do you imagine your organizing and trans politics and trans communities going in the future?
I want to run for our office.
Yeah, you'd like to be a politician?
Mm-hmm. I want to do that because I want to be the first trans woman running for her office.
Yeah.
Because we've seen a lot of gay people there, lesbian people. But where is the trans community?
Yeah.
Well, we don't give the opportunity to the trans people to change everything from there, from the chair, not from outside. We're doing a lot of work outside, but we have to do in the table.
Yeah.
And that is one of them. And I always put everything in here, and I put everything here. That's mean like wrong for the world.
Have you seen in your 5 years of doing this job, what have you seen change for trans Latino people in Queens? What has gotten better? You mentioned Trump as something getting worse.
Something that is getting better is, I think when I started doing work here at McDonough, we were seeing a lot of police brutality or police abuse.
Yeah.
Many people, trans women, have been arrested because, you know, false arrests. But after our work, because we have a meeting with 115, one time they don't open the door to have some meetings with them. But with 115, we always have meetings, we have trainings, sensibility trainings.
So this is the 115th precinct,
yeah,
of the New York Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is 115, and we always do like trainings, and we talk about what is a trans person, how a trans person survive. And we see that there is no many arrests.
Yeah, well, but at 110th, they're less open. Is that what you said?
No, I'm saying that they don't want to, like, they don't want us to go, like,
yeah,
there to do the same. That's
yeah,
with the 115.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
And are there other organizing goals or projects that Trip has been working on?
Stop hate crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because 20 attacks in 2016 to now, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And most of them has been 110.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, because I have the opportunity to go with my members to do the report, and they refuse to do the report. Why? Because they are trans, they laugh at us.
Yeah. At the police station.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Trip is, I don't know of another project like this where Make the Road is mostly Latinos,
mm-hmm,
Latino immigrants, and 21,000 members working on many different issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then Trip is a trans Latina project within that,
mm-hmm,
within a bigger multi-issue organization. And most other organizations I know in New York are either gay organizations, or their trans organizations, or they organize some community of color or a neighborhood. But I don't know another example of like a trans group within a much bigger community organization.
Yeah.
How do you get, what's the relationship between Trip and the rest of Make the Road like?
I think it's a good relationship.
Yeah.
Because at the Trans Latina March, not only trans,
yeah,
march with us.
I saw many.
We have a lot of
members. Yeah.
Members.
Yeah.
That support us. I do a lot of presentations about homophobia and transphobia.
Yeah.
And you know, sensibility trainings to them. And it has been working. Because there was a lot of people, like, you know, straight people marching with us, having a sign saying, I'm a trans person and I'm here to resist. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of old straight Mexican,
yes,
people in the march. Like,
it
a
was
couple
amazing,
holding,
yes,
hands. And, yeah.
It was amazing.
Interesting. That seems like a very powerful organizing,
yeah,
model. Anything else you'd like to talk about or include?
No, I think we cover everything.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
No, thanks to you. I was seeing this photo, and I really love it.
So it's a photo of a child in a stroller, and it said, "No one should do bad things to people who are different." Trans Latino March, Hank, age 4.
Wow,
that's great.
Right? That is amazing.
Okay,
so listen.